Thank you for your regular and generous support of Issues Etc. in the past year, 2008. A good summary of my hopes for Issues Etc. for 2009 are St. Paul's words to the Colossians. Pray for us, too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Thank you again for your support of Issues Etc. We'll continue defending the faith, teaching the truth, and making the most of every opportunity to proclaim Christ and Him crucified.
I got a God who knows what it is to be a poor black man in a country that is controlled by and run by rich white people.
Most of the time, when I'm in church, he's talking about Jesus, God, faith, values, caring for the poor, family. Those were the messages that I was hearing.
Any comments that he made about the Catholic Church, I strongly condemned.
Yet you solicited and accepted his endorsement.
Yes, indeed I did.
Was it a mistake to solicit and accept his endorsement?
Oh, probably. Sure.
But really, all of that stuff doesn't do any good if the people of Alaska's heart isn't right with God.
A little sound from the news, a little sound from 2008. In fact, that sound covers the top three religion stories from 2008, according to the Religion News Writers Association. We're going to talk a little bit about those stories and others. Jeff and I sometimes worry, doing a religious radio talk show, that we're not going to have enough fodder in the news. Well, 2008 did not disappoint us. And one of the frustrating things about our short time off during 2008 was some of the best stories were breaking when we weren't on the radio. Of course, we got back to them when we came back. But religion stories were everywhere, and it seems as though they're here to stay. We're going to talk about the top 10 religion stories. We've got a roundtable of journalists with us this afternoon. We're coming to you live this Friday afternoon. It's the 9th of January. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. We do want to hear from you. What do you think was the top religion story of 2008? 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our guest for the roundtable, joining us here in the studio, Colleen Carol Campbell. She's St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. She's a regular guest, and so often I think Thursdays on the telephone. Now it's nice to have you here in the studio.
Great to be here.
Also in the studio, Uwe Simonetto. It's his first time over here to our bunker, and he's a regular guest. He's the director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life, and he served formerly as the religion editor for United Press International. Uwe, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And then joining us on the phone, another regular guest, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. She's a journalist in Washington, D.C. and contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
The first thing I wanted to talk about was a story that actually happened this year. In fact, it happened yesterday morning. Father Richard John Newhouse passed away after a fight with cancer. And I think all of us are acquainted with him in some form or another. He was a regular guest on this program. I'd like to start with you, Colleen. Your thoughts on the passing of this man who was a man of civil rights, a man of life, and a man of deep religious conviction.
Yes, well, I think his passing is certainly a great loss to us in America, and particularly for the pro-life movement and Christians. And I did have the privilege to get to know him. I first got to know him in Poland, where he was helping to lead a three-week seminar on the thought of Pope John Paul II, actually. And I studied with him there and met with him a number of times after that. And he appeared on my show on EWTN. And he's just, you know, I think what he really did, he had a passion for young people and young Christians in particular, passing on these values. And he really gave us, in many ways, he really provided a lot of the intellectual muscle, I think, for the pro-life movement in the last few decades. And he especially gave us a framework for thinking about the role of religion in public life and a language we could use, particularly, I think, to young Christians that will really be a big part of his legacy.
Molly, your thoughts on the passing of Father Newhouse?
It's been hard. I really miss him already. And I, even reading a few stories today, I was
thinking, I wonder what he would have to say about this. His legacy is profound. He was a voracious reader. I've never seen someone synthesize so much information. His Public Square column and First Things, I mean, that is a treasure, and I love that entire journal, but that was particularly was a particularly good portion of the journal. He read far and wide. He read the tiniest Lutheran newsletters to the, you know, most dense encyclicals in the Catholic Church, and he just had a really good way of explaining those ideas in layman's understanding, and he was so funny, and it's a tremendous loss, whether you agreed with him on everything or disagreed with him in large or small part. He was a wonderful man to have in the conversation.
Uwe, you had the longest acquaintance with Father Newhouse. Your thoughts on his passing?
Well, I've known Richard John Newhouse when he was still a Lutheran pastor. In fact, he was affiliated with the church. My wife Jillian and I were married in Emmanuel in New York City. And Molly is, of course, very right. He was in a very, very amusing and entertaining spirit. My thoughts were a couple. First of all, two branches of Christianity will miss him sorely, because he is and always has been a Lutheran in many ways. He has never given up his theology of the cross and the law and gospel dichotomy. And, of course, he became a Roman Catholic priest. So I think both Lutheran theologians and Roman Catholics at large will mourn him. Furthermore, he left us a legacy. I think one of the most powerful papers he wrote while he was dying of cancer. This was his second cancer, by the way, and I spoke with him just at Christmas the last time on the phone. And that paper was on a warning of the coming of the Kulturkampf, the cultural struggle. This is over FOCA, you know, the
Freedom of Choice Act.
Freedom of Choice Act. Probably the most compelling argument and beautifully phrased argument against Freedom of Choice Act, and a warning to the public at large of what will come. So I think this is something which also probably leads right into our discussion in a little while of what the most important religious topics were and will be. And I think Newhouse will leave us with this legacy of warning us of an immense danger that is coming our way.
Well, for my part, and I said some of this a little bit previous on the show, Father Newhouse was a guest on this program. It was an honor to have him on because the man is a towering intellect. I think he raised the caliber of the pro-life conversation in the public square to a level and maintained it there that I don't think it would have enjoyed had he not been part of that conversation. Obviously, there are profound theological differences when he left to become a son of Rome. Yet I respect the fact that he was following his conscience there and did this conscientiously, and simply must always hold in my mind, in his defense of life, the thing that he left me with, which was the conviction that abortion is the civil rights struggle of our time. And he spoke that with some integrity, having done a lot of marching along some of the giants of civil rights.
May I say something to that? It is not just the civil rights issue. He articulated what many people now dare to say, and many people did not dare to say, and that this is the equivalent of a Holocaust. After 48 million dead since Roe v. Wade, you cannot speak of anything other than a Holocaust. And he actually articulated that. That is something that we should really bear in mind.
I found it a privilege to speak with him as one who had profound theological differences and yet a complete ally in the defense of life and the rest of the culture war in general. All right, let's talk about the top 10 religion stories. Colleen, do you think they got the top story right, the top one that is listed according to the Religion News Writers Association, are the controversial sermons of the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's former pastor at Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago, and Obama's withdrawal from that congregation during the campaign?
Well, I think that certainly got the most press, and it was perhaps the most controversial story. I guess If you were speaking more broadly, though, I think there were a lot of interesting religion themes that came up, and they touched on a few of these in their list. But certainly, one of the most interesting stories I thought was the way that the Democratic Party attempted to court religious voters and the kind of positive press they got for doing so, in contrast to the very negative press that Republicans and conservatives tend to get when doing so. So it was interesting, just as someone who watches and comments on issues of religion in public life, to see what a difference, you know, a year makes when it depends, you know, which party's doing the best with religious voters or making the most attempts. I thought another story that was just touched upon in this Religion News Service, Religion News Writers list, but not really, I thought it explained very well, was the Sarah Palin story. They emphasize this idea of a lot of evangelicals being uncomfortable with a woman in leadership, but what I found far more common in terms of the coverage and of the Palin story, and far more interesting, was the fact that we had a pro-life Christian woman who, whether you believe she was qualified or not, whether you agree with her on particular policy issues or not, was really presenting, embodying a different kind of role as a woman and as a self-proclaimed feminist, and challenged, I think, in many ways simply by being who she was in the public square, challenged a lot of ideas of what a feminist is, what a Christian woman is, and where a woman belongs. And I thought it was really interesting that when they tried to bring up Palin in this list, they just didn't really seem to get what was the heart of the controversy. So I think her strong pro-life and Christian convictions, again, whether you think she was a right fit for the VP slot is a different question, I think she really raised a pretty interesting religion issue this year.
That's exactly right, Colleen, and that what I find so interesting, all those stories that people were trying to say that evangelicals were having a hard time swallowing a Palin candidacy, they could barely find anyone to come on the record to say that maybe it was an issue. I mean, it was a completely trumped up story, and the idea that it would be that Sarah Palin not being accepted by evangelicals would be number three on this list is somewhat odd.
Well, when we come back, I want Molly's thoughts on that. She writes for GetReligion.org, and it sounds like part of the theme will be they're not getting religion. Stay tuned.
But politics, religion, and her. But politics, religion, and her.
Depression, the Silent Epidemic, is the title of a seminar Tuesday evening, February the 10th, at the Wisconsin Room at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Beverly Yonke is the presenter. Learn how to spot signs of depression in yourself and how to help others who are suffering, deeply hurting, or depressed. Find out more about Depression, the Silent Epidemic, at www.lmcusc.org or by calling 414-332-5732.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is full of resources to help you and your congregation observe the season of Lent. It's titled, O Sacred Head Now Wounded. It contains devotions, Bible studies, sermons, children's messages, and bulletins for the Lenten season. You can purchase O Sacred Head Now Wounded by calling Concordia Publishing House, 800-325-3040, or click the CPH logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Sacred Head Now Wounded.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A compelling case against euthanasia.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The case of a young girl who was nearly killed by the state of Massachusetts is sparking renewed debate over euthanasia. Haley Poutre, who was abused by her mother and severely beaten by her foster parents, fell into a coma after being hospitalized for her injuries. After Haley was declared brain dead by doctors, the Massachusetts Department of Social Services sought to remove her from life support and allow her to die. But before that legal process could be completed, Haley suddenly came out of her coma and has recently been videotaped feeding herself and brushing her hair.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
We'll get there. All right, welcome back. Conversation continues when the mics are on or when they're off. It doesn't make much difference. It's a reporters' roundtable this afternoon on Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Friday, the 9th of January. I'm Todd Wilkin. Colleen Carol Campbell is here in studio along with Uwe Simonetto and Molly Ziegler-Hemingway on the phone. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Uwe, I do want to get to you, but I got to let Molly finish her thought that she was
She is much more beautiful than
all right. Molly, do you think that, generally speaking, Religion News Writers Association gets religion in the way that they put together the top 10 list?
Well, you know, I've always thought that lists were funny, and I think it's because I'm female. I don't make lists. I think it's a distinctively male trait to order and list things in this fashion. So I don't want to. I just am almost congenitally incapable of making a list. But I do see. You know, these were all obviously major stories, and you know, I have some quibbles here and there. And I totally agree with what Colleen was saying about them totally not getting the real Sarah Palin story and the visceral hatred and reaction among the press and various other people. Toward Palin's candidacy. I mean, that to me was the top story. And you saw it reflected in so much of the media coverage of her. You know, the LA Times repeatedly called her a fundamentalist Christian. You know, the AP style book says you shouldn't call people fundamentalist Christians unless they are, which she's not. But just the derisiveness and the hatred and the loathing that came out in each and every story about this woman. I mean, it was a sight to behold.
Uwe, you've been writing behind the religion desk for a long time.
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, let me first correct my friend Molly. I watched my wife make a list this morning, and she's definitely female. I mean, we are not postmodern. And I refute this list altogether here because this is such a Mickey Mouse list. It is so linear that and so parochial. It's as if the world only consisted of catechetical ignorance of most American journalists, and so therefore everything had to be adjusted accordingly. Let me say one thing. They got one thing right. Yes, Barack Obama was the top religion newsmaker in 2008. But that's where it stops. He was a top religion newsmaker in a passive sense, in that he became the object of adulation. I watched this in my own homeland, Germany. 200,000 Berliners kissing his feet. Berliners kissing his feet at the victory column. It's the one victory the Germans ever celebrated, and they set up that column, and Obama went straight there, and they all. They had 200,000. I've seen these scenes before. I'm not comparing Obama, obviously, to a vile dictator. It's more the reaction, the global reaction, which to me as a Lutheran always conjures up the image of what Luther called Schwärmerei, utopianism, enthusiasm, without any real reason or reasonable thought behind it. Simply everybody suddenly revered this guy. He became the Messiah. And that the world, not just America, I mean Germany, France, England, all in various at various levels, should suddenly venerate a man who had only been a junior senator from Illinois until that point, as a quasi messiah, is to me the number one religion story, because it shows us in what a dire situation we're in, theologically speaking, and from the point of view of theology of religion, sociology of religion. The second thing, we're talking about the right. Issue. This is the number one issue. I watched this. I've read what Wright had to say. Nobody mentioned, for reasons of political correctness, the real story. And the real story is the tragedy of the black church, or of elements of the black church that Wright represents, who are doing so much harm to their own people. And I've been watching this before I joined UPI, and long before I did anything. I covered the civil rights movement and interviewed Martin Luther King. And the decline of certain members, certain parts of the black clergy to a bunch of people who just actually spout racial slurs all over the place. Now, I happen to belong to an all-black Lutheran congregation in Washington, D.C., so don't get me wrong. And we have probably one of the finest preachers, who happens to be black, and one of the most faithful preachers around. It's funny that these guys get never quoted. But Wright somehow became the cliché of a church that should not be that way and is in dire need of renewal. But I'd like to leave it at here, otherwise I'll be drummed out of the studio here.
Oh, no, you still have a place.
I mean, oh, can I still shout and scream and rant and rave in my Teutonic way?
All you wish to do, Uwe. Yeah, okay. That's your privilege.
That is.
I want to know what the rest of you think about the top religion stories of 2008, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Uwe Simonetta was with us, along with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway and Colleen Carroll Campbell. Colleen, one of the stories that fell in the middle of the list for the religion writers was the visit of Pope Benedict XVI, which I think in any other year would have been one or two had we not been electing a president here. Your thoughts on the visit of Pope Benedict?
Well, I think it was very important, not only to the Catholic Church, but just to the country in general. Of course, the top headline from his visit was the fact that he met personally with a number of victims of the clergy abuse scandals and apologized and made it very clear on the plane before he ever even touched down in the United States that he was not going to soft pedal his reaction to this and his shame over what had happened. So that was, I think, a very healing and important moment for the Catholic Church in America, which has been obviously reeling since these scandals came out in 2002 and really in need of that kind of cleansing sort of confessional statement from the leader of the church. So that was extremely important. The other thing that was so important, though, I think, was just the swarms that he once again drew of young people in Yonkers at his youth rally, but of course also in Australia, where shortly after his visit in the United States, he went to Australia, had a World Youth Day there that drew 400,000 people to its final mass, which was the largest crowd ever assembled in Australia. So this frail, aging pontiff who is supposed to be not hip enough to follow in John Paul's footsteps is drawing them in by the thousands and millions in some cases. And he is once again speaking to the hearts of young Christians who are hungry for leadership and they're hungry for the truth. So I think that visit was important and he was a big religion newsmaker this year.
May I jump in here, please? Because that is precisely what I'd like to say. And it's precisely one of my criticisms of this list. There is a global hunger for faith, specifically among the young. I've just spent December in France, where I have my second home, went to a Roman Catholic church there. The church was chock-a-block, filled up right to the narthex, standing room only, and mainly young people, simply because that particular priest knows it does his job well and preaches right and has the proper liturgy. And when the Pope, this Pope Benedict now, went to Lourdes, for example. He had so many powerful things to say that were not Marian and so therefore made many Lutherans pay attention to what he had to say as well. And it was is well quoted. The most important religion story of our time is while the church in Europe as well as in the United States, the church as a structure or as an organization might be in decline, there is a nucleus, a growing nucleus, or a strengthening nucleus of young Christians who will be in the minority, but that's not new in the church in church history. And this particular pope, who is almost 90, appeals to them. Why? Because he is truthful, and because he's honest, and because what he has to say is not some political nonsense like Jeremiah Wright, but he's actually speaking the gospel.
Molly, we've got about a minute here before we need to take another break. One of the stories that I think I'd like you to address is number 6 on the list, and that's the more conservative scriptural elements of the Episcopal Church USA deciding finally at long last to say goodbye to this province of Anglicanism and seek refuge elsewhere. With about a minute, start some reflection on that story.
Well, I think it's interesting that made the list. It's obviously a big story, and journalists love to cover Anglicans and Episcopalians despite their relatively small size in the United States. But what was also interesting was the Lambeth Conference that preceded this this decision to try and go for a different province in North America and gave sort of the theological underpinning for explaining that. I mean, Lambeth said that it's not that theology is more important than sort of the English base of the church, and that it's the theology that unites Anglicans across the world. And I think that was actually a much more important story that didn't even make the top 10 list.
We're talking about the top 10 religion stories according to Religion News Writers Association. Our guests here in the studio, Colleen Carroll Campbell, St. Louis-based fellow for Ethics and Public Policy Center, writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Uwe Simonetto, director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life. He formerly served as religion editor for United Press International. And on the phone from Washington, D.C., Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, a contributor to GetReligion.org. You can give us your phone call or email if you'd like to vote for what you think should be on the list or at the top of the list for the religion stories in 2008. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. Our in-studio email address on this Friday, the 9th of January. talkback@issuesztc.org. Stay tuned. 25 more minutes of religion in the news after this.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The earth is young, but how do we know?
Answers with Ken Ham, a speaker at the highly popular Answers in Genesis family conferences.
I'm often asked, do we have any scientific evidence that the earth is young? Well, it's important to understand that no one can scientifically prove how old the earth is. See, every method a scientist uses to date the Earth has to start with some assumptions. And this means that neither evolutionists nor creationists have any ultimate scientific proof about the age of the Earth. But most of the methods a scientist can use give dates much younger than the billions of years required by evolution. If a scientist looks at them honestly, he'd have to conclude that there's something dreadfully wrong with the evolutionary ages. For instance, there's the amount of salt in the ocean, the life of short-period comets, many other examples which support a young age. Actually, 90% of methods to date things on Earth give dates much younger than the dates required by secular scientists. So how do we know the Earth is young? Well, the Bible says God created everything in 6 days only thousands of years ago.
Well, if the Earth is young, why do so many environmentalists claim that the climate has been changing over millions of years? We examine that in our handbook on global warming. For some fascinating reading, get your copy when you offer a donation of any amount. Call toll-free, 24 hours a day, at 888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS, or on the web, answersoffer.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, my people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
We're talking about the top religion stories of 2008. Colleen Carroll Campbell, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, and Uwe Simonetto are our guests on this Friday afternoon, January the 9th. 25 more minutes in this roundtable. We'd like your input. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, or talk back at issuesztc.org. Here's Andy listening in Kirkwood.
Hi, Todd, and greetings to all. I have to second Molly's thought just before the break. I've been following the Anglican Episcopalian story all year, and it's been most interesting. And one of the most interesting things is that the media doesn't play it up very much because people are going in the direction opposite that I think the media would want them to go in. And the other thing is when Cardinal Ratzinger became Pope Benedict, a friend of mine told me, watch this man. He's a very deep theologian. And certainly it's not in 2008, but the comment that he made a couple of days ago really perked my ears up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Do you know what comment he's talking about, Colleen?
I'm not sure. Boy, he speaks pretty frequently.
That was the comment about homosexuality.
Oh, yes. Gender theory. That's right. He made headlines with that.
Molly, what did he have to say?
Well, it was actually something I wanted to bring up about the mention of the Pope here. I don't think that his visit to America was anywhere near the top. It should be near the top of newsmaking events that he was participating in over the previous year. And in particular, I mean, just in December, the Vatican came out with a document that looked at gender theory in general and declared it a very big threat to sanctity of life issues and understanding of the family. Another thing that the Vatican did in the past year was have a conference on the need to improve preaching in Catholic services. And Benedict has been just amazing in his emphasis of being Christ-centered. And, it is a definite change over the previous pope, however much, people may generally be favorable toward both of them. And I almost feel like that conference on the importance of preaching and prayer life and emphasizing the need to be Christ-centered in all that we do, I almost think that was the most important thing of the previous year.
1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Here's Kathy calling from St. Charles. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Yeah, I'm enjoying your conversations, and I agree with what Uwe Simonetto was talking about regarding Barack Obama. I think the election is very pivotal for our country because of the type of mentality that goes along with what he was talking about, almost idolizing this man, and also and the reasons for that, I guess the political, the looking to the government as our savior, along with the leader, and how he represents that to people. I just think it's extremely pivotal. It's a very I think the political landscape of our nation, it could very well change drastically, not because of color, but because of the philosophies and ideas that are going behind this man.
Colleen, I'd like to hand that to you and then to Uwe. You wrote a book some time back, The New Faithful, where you talked about the return to historic Orthodox Christianity on the part of young people, and yet the same young people in the United States, maybe not the same young people, but the same generation of people, have found in Barack Obama inspiring ideas like hope and a time to participate and a time for their generation to come to the fore. How do you evaluate that, the America's youth in this whole thing?
Well, certainly there's a deep spiritual hunger among young Americans. We know that. And I think in some ways Barack Obama tapped into that very effectively. When you look at the breakdown in terms of voters and religious attendance, you once again get the same split among the younger demographic as you get generally. That is, those who are very frequent church attenders and are not the ones who are going crazy with Obama mania. So it is a different group. And the new faithful about whom I wrote are the smaller. They are a minority in their generation. However, they're a growing minority. They're one with a great deal of influence in their churches because they're the ones who are there and who are active. And I think for a lot of those young people, I mean, I was on college campuses actually talking about the book around election week and was seeing a lot of glum faces among those young adults. So there is this other group of young adults. They are certainly in voting patterns. They were not as numerous as those who supported Barack Obama among the youth. But, it's a group that's very deeply committed not only to Christian orthodoxy, but specifically to being active on the pro-life cause. And these are young adults who are not going to throw in the towel because they lost an election or the pro-life candidate lost an election. They're in this for the long haul. So there's a lot of hope there. And as for the others, I think, these are not two separate airtight pools where one never crosses from one to the other. Many of the new faithful used to be in the other camp. They were looking for something transcendent in all sorts of things that are not. And, you know, you never know how many of these may mature into something else, something deeper, into a faith commitment down the road, depending on how we reach out to them.
Uwe, I'll give you about 30 seconds to follow.
Yeah, sure. We've known this from history that both faith and idolatry are religious phenomena. So there are, you know, there are parallel urges from the way out. I have this story of a friend of mine called me, a German Jew living in Berlin, 96 years old, who was one of the first prisoners in Buchenwald concentration camp, and one of the then escaped and was one of the first American soldiers to liberate Buchenwald. And he said to me, we've been friends for 45 years. He said to me, Uwe, when I watch this, you know, this idolatry, the adulation, it reminded me of Nuremberg. Because, you see, those who cheered Heil, Heil in Nuremberg were also religious in a sense. They weren't men of faith or women of faith, but they were religious. And they had an urge. Not that I'm saying that Obama is Hitler. What I'm saying is he inspires a very, very, or triggers a very, very curious form of idolatry that is global and that we have to watch, and which is the reason why we as Christians now have to be very, very clear about what we believe in and how we articulate our faith.
Carrie in Minnesota emails us. She has a suggestion for an addition to the list. She says, I think Issues Etc. being canceled due to programmatic and financial reasons, she says, I am being sarcastic here, should be on the list. She says, that woke up a lot of people. I think more people are aware of the new Issues Etc. now, and all things end up working together for the good. I wholeheartedly agree, Carrie. Now, Molly, you were part of the newsmakers in this story. Are you surprised that the cancellation of this radio program didn't make Religion News Writers Association list top 10 of the 2008?
It was my number one story of the year. I don't know. But it does speak to a broader trend, and broad trends usually don't make newsmaker lists. But when you look at the bureaucratization of national church bodies or international church bodies, or the disconnect between the leadership of church bodies, which tend to be much more liberal than their lay people. And it's a great hook to sort of explore these problems that exist in basically almost every church.
Okay, one of the stories on the list I do want to talk about, it has to do with China. A lot of news comes out of China about trade, about their industry, about the fact that they're modernizing at such a pace that they really can't keep up with their own country and their growth. But China also has a serious problem of religious liberty. And Colleen, I wanted you to address this, especially with regard to the Buddhists, but also with regard to house churches and unofficial churches in that largest of nations on the planet. And I'm surprised it was low on the list.
Yeah, and certainly with the Olympics, that was why it got as much press as it did. You know, this is an ongoing issue, and we get reports, obviously, continuous reports, particularly from underground churches in China. There's certainly in the Catholic Church, there's this division between the one that's officially accepted, which has, you know, a lot of divisions with Rome, and is not, you know, then the martyrs in the underground church. So, you know, I think there's been such a focus on China as a superpower that we really, this is kind of the secret we all know and just don't focus on a lot. And as you said, in some ways has a global story. And in terms of the numbers of Christians being affected by the persecution, and then there are other abuses as well, you know, even aside from the lack of religious freedom, that the continuation of the forced abortion policy in China. I mean, we're still hearing stories, and we're now beginning to see its effects with this huge gender imbalance now in China, as we have all of these adult males and so few women. You know, there's so many things that I think we're going to continue to see coming out of China, so many bad fruits, really, of these decades of repression.
Well, when we come back, I'm going to get Uwe's thought there. We're close on a break. I wonder sometimes as we concentrate on China as trading partner, trading rival, are they too big for themselves right now? Can they handle their place in the new global economy? Are there still freedoms there? Will this help them become a more free nation? We forget that there are people who, Christians, who live their entire lives from their baptism until their death, never knowing anything but the oppression and the religious lack of freedom in that country, and they simply cannot imagine what we have here in this nation and in Western Europe and elsewhere. They cannot imagine living in a world not only of affluence and industry, but also one where religious freedom is simply taken for granted. I think if you've got a sixth of the world population living without religious freedom, that probably should make the list every single year. When we come back, I'd like your thoughts and your comments on the top religion stories of 2008. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, talkback at issuesetc.org.
That's the news, that's the ever-loving, blessed headline news. Someone's missing in Modesto, and it's sad about the clues.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of Issues Etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, talking about the top 10 religion stories of 2008 with our roundtable of reporters. Colleen Carroll Campbell, St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, a journalist in Washington, D.C., contributor to GetReligion.org, and Uwe C. Minetto, director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life, formerly served as religion editor for United Press International. You'll find links to all of their websites and their activities and their blogs under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. So what do you think was the top religion story of 2008? Talk back at issuesetc.org. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Uwe, you wanted to address the growing persecution of Christians in on this planet as one of those stories.
Well, I should have thought that the growing persecution, rapidly growing persecution of Christianity the world over, not just in China, but in Africa, in the Muslim world, and let's not forget in a more modest sense in academia, that this should be the religion story of the year, because that's what's happening. Because those of us who've been trained in church history also know that that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. So the result of this persecution is going to be ultimately a strengthened Christianity. And we know this from China. You just discussed China at great length. I covered the Chinese Cultural Revolution from Hong Kong when Christians were beheaded, were tortured to death, and all sorts of things. And when we thought Christianity was wiped out, and later on we discovered that while all this was taking place, Christianity grew by leaps and bounds in the underground, in caves somewhere in central and northern China. This is actually the real story. The real story of our time, if we don't only look at the American belly button, but you know, consider the rest of the world as worthy of our contemplation, then we will find that the persecution of the of Christianity, which is growing, with the result, the definite result that ultimately Christianity will be will grow and will strengthen, that this is the actual religion story of our time, and of course was of the religion story of last year as well.
This is an email from Josh in St. Louis. He says, I think an important story in religion this year was Rick Warren's candidate forum. He asked the best questions out of anyone in the media. His debate revealed more about John McCain and Barack Obama than any of the three official debates moderated by mainstream media figures. No offense to your panel, he says. Isn't it funny that in times where we hear about the separation of church and state, it was a churchman who ran the most insightful political debate? Josh, thanks for the email. Molly, your thoughts?
Oh, it's so interesting. I mean, it really was the best forum of all the presidential forums. I have absolutely no idea why a pastor was running it, and you know, it kind of concerns me about the confusion that that pastor himself has about the proper role of a churchman and when what's the most important job he has. And I think it'll be very interesting to see when he delivers the invocation at the inauguration, which has caused so much. Has caused so many people to be upset. It'll be interesting to see if he prays as a Christian, if he doesn't, you know, what the future is for Rick Warren, who cares so much about having a broad reach and being in the public square. It's a very different model than, say, a Richard John Newhouse.
Okay, we've only got about 7 minutes here, so I want to get predictions in, and since there are three of you, I want to give you as much time as we possibly can. Brief thoughts with only about 15 seconds here. Your thoughts, I saw your eyes light up on the Rick Warren forum, so I want you to be able to chime in, Colleen.
Well, I thought the points certainly that Molly made and also your listener were right on. I mean, I had that Saddleback forum down on my list as one of the big religion stories that didn't make this RNA list, and I think one of the reasons, certainly coming back to the pro-life issue, I mean, that was an issue that he raised that, you know, we just didn't hear discussed in three presidential debates and a vice presidential debate. It was almost completely off the table, all to Barack Obama's benefit. And I thought that was a real, it was part of the reason I think the life issues didn't really surface in this election. And just thinking also on other stories that were important, I just want to mention certainly the same-sex marriage debate continues to raise California's decision allowing it, the California voters' decision to rebuke it, and then probably judges reinstating it. That's going to be a huge battle, I think, taking up a lot of headlines in the coming year.
Do you think that there will be a forum like the Saddleback forum 4 years from now when Barack Obama is running as an incumbent?
I don't know. I think it will be interesting to see who would actually run that. As Molly said, I think Rick Warren's identity is maybe a bit in flux right now. We're all kind of curious to see how he's going to navigate the waters that he sort of stepped into. I'd like it to be maybe in a little more public space. And I wish there were more people who could run something like that. And perhaps our mainstream media getting a bit squeezed out by the internet and more niche media might be a good thing in that respect.
Okay, predictions. Uwe, you get to go first. I'll let the ladies follow up. Your predictions for 2000.
Yes, I want to predict something that is linked to Warren.
Okay.
Do you happen to know that members of Warren's own church, Saddleback, keep creeping into a nearby Lutheran church during Lent for weekday services of confessions and absolution? Okay? This leads, of course, to my prediction. The way I look, I'm not a pessimist, because pessimism, as Heidegger said, is a childish category, but I'm also not an optimist either, and it would also be childish. But I do believe that we are facing dire times. and when confession and absolution will be very much in demand. And I don't think you get it at Saddleback, and certainly not at the homosexual bishop of New England, whom New York Times columnist, not New England, you know, New Hampshire, whom New York Times columnist wished would give the inaugural prayer in Washington. I think my prediction is that we will all, in the months to come, find that confession and absolution and Lord have mercy will be the most important words to be said.
Some wise words. Colleen, what about 2009? What do you predict will emerge as a top religion story in the year to come?
I think the reaction to the economy is going to be an important story. We've been hearing a lot about you know, people losing a lot and different government packages, which I think are far too inflated and frighteningly, you know, big government responses to this. But what we haven't focused on much is the spiritual response. And I think this could be an opening for believers to reach out to neighbors and friends. It could be a time where the church once again sort of reasserts itself as a center of meaning in a culture that has lost its way, or of course it could be a missed opportunity. But I think, you know, our whole materialistic outlook is really being rattled right now, and as painful as that is, that might be a good thing ultimately for America.
Molly, you've got less than a minute. You get the final word here. Your prediction for 2009, watching religion in the news.
It's a pretty parochial response, but I do think that the gay marriage debate will be a major story throughout 2009. I think we'll see the California Supreme Court making some moves. We might see cases being elevated to the Supreme Court. And I think specifically as a religion story, people are starting to see that there is some conflict between same-sex marriage and gay marriage rights and religious freedom. And in almost every case that is going to the courts, religious adherents are losing out. People aren't free to run their businesses as they want. If they oppose same-sex marriage, they're forced to be vendors at these events, or religious institutions are being told they can't preclude the use of their space for same-sex marriage ceremonies and whatnot. I think that it's been curious to me that we haven't seen much coverage of this clash, but I think it'll be unavoidable in the future.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a journalist in Washington, D.C., a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is a regular guest St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, good to see you here in the studio.
Great to be here.
And Uwe Simonetto. Thank you very much, my friend, for coming over. Uwe is director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life and formerly served as religion editor for United Press International. Thank you.
Wonderful to see you in your new digs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I kind of like seeing myself in them as well. Well, Monday on the program, we'll discuss the baptism of Jesus. It's one of the hallmark events of the Epiphany season. So look forward to that Monday on the program. Well, the news continues to roll and the cycle's 24 hours, and I used to think that meant that the news never stopped over 24 hours, that no one ever stopped talking about it. But I realized over the Christmas vacation that 24-hour news cycle actually means that the stories only last 24 hours, and then there's a new one to replace it, and it becomes this insatiable, voracious, impossible-to-satisfy desire for more information, even if it's pseudo-information. The real stories always remain the same, and especially for the Christian who looks out in a world that he finds himself in but not of. He continues to watch the news. He says all of these are signs of the times. The times may be far off, they may be near, but they are all the signs of the times. What do you do when the news is bad for the Christians, when persecution comes your way? Well, there are worse things than a bad economy. There are worse things than dying for the faith. In fact, one of the best things that Christians have found to do with their lives in confession of their Lord is to spend them. That may be in store for us. Who knows? I'm Todd Wilkin. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.